And on the line, we have Moreland Councillor Sue Bolton. Welcome, Sue.
Yeah, good morning,
Hi,
Sue.
Hi, how's it going?
All right, so Sue, I guess one of the reasons we had you on the line is that you're one of the initiators of the recent sort of broad-based sort of climate group, Climate Justice Alliance Melbourne, which is organising a big National Day of Action on February the 22nd. I kind of want to see, like, from your kind of political here, from your political perspective on kind of why you kind of initiated this alliance and coalition.
Well, I was mostly motivated by the bushfire crisis when I had discussions with several people, sort of working class people who certainly not, they recognise that climate change is a thing, but they're not, they didn't feel at all confident about asserting that to anyone who is a climate denier in their workplace or social group or family, and were asking me, did I think bushfires were caused by climate change or lack of burning off, lack of hazard reduction. And people weren't trying to ask me trick questions or take the mickey out of me. They were just genuinely interested in my opinion as to whether I thought the bushfires were caused by climate change or not. And obviously it also meant that people were listening to this Morrison argument about too many environmental laws that are stopping hazard reduction. And so people were sort of just wanting to know. And I was sort of feeling like the climate movement isn't necessarily connecting with a whole bunch of people who are sympathetic to the arguments about the need for climate action, but they're not confident enough to basically state that very confidently to people. And in reality, we need those people involved in the climate movement or more confidently able to say that climate change is the issue in order to force action on the big corporations and the government. Because while there is a section of the population that sort of half thinks climate change is the issue but not highly confident about that, then this Morrison government, or even if the ALP came into power, they would be able to get away with tokenistic measures or not taking measures or whatever. We need the power of the people, because we know that the politicians aren't going to act. They haven't acted for 20, 30, 40 years, however long we've known about climate change. So that's why I was sort of feeling like in the climate movement it's quite divided, really, and it's very dominated by, climate NGOs, who do, certain good things. I'm not saying they don't, but it means that because they're NGOs, they tend to do just branded actions by themselves. They're not thinking about building a broad movement. And so what we're seeing is, and even some of the more activist-y kind of groups, are all organising just their own branded actions by themselves without trying to build a broad climate movement where everyone's working together and we're trying to show the power of everyone working together and calling out the largest possible actions around climate change. So that's really where we came from. And I actually think, what we've done so far, I mean, we've only been going since the end of January, is that actually we've got a whole bunch of unions on board for this big climate crisis protest that's going to be happening not this weekend but the following weekend. So we have got some groups working together, and I think for some of the small climate groups it also gives people a bit of a focus, beyond their suburbs, something that they can work with others around.
And what can you tell us about, I guess your position on what? Why is a united kind of front of different sort of political groups and climate groups working together something that's necessary in terms of this today's kind of political climate?
Well, I think unless that can happen, we're not going to be able to build a sufficiently strong movement to challenge to challenge the government and challenge the corporation, we'll only be mobilising a small part of that movement, and we won't be sufficiently putting the ruling class, the coal barons, on notice. You know, there have been Stop Adani campaigns and this and that campaign, but it really wasn't until the school students came out onto the street that, at the end of 2018, that there were mass protests again. And unfortunately, the climate movement, as it's dominated by NGOs, had actually gone off the street. And then the last couple of mobilisations before that had been years before. So before the school strike for climate, I think there might have been a protest in, about 3 or 4 years before that. But really, that's not good enough when we've got this massive climate crisis. And probably I would say one weakness of the Stop Adani campaign, while, people have done a lot of great work in that campaign, is it hasn't really been an on-the-streets campaign. And, I think if it had been, it would have, answered a lot more questions and rebutted a lot more of the arguments that the right wing puts forward about why they need to keep, have this mind, which we obviously don't need. And I just think, you're not going to have sufficient power unless you have that broad alliance. And I think one of the things is that you've also got to go beyond just mobilising people who, have a strong understanding of the science. Obviously, it is good to have an understanding of the science. But for us to be able to win this, we have to win ordinary, everyday, working-class people who may not be scientists. And, my observation of the whole climate debate from years ago is that there was a massive support for climate action. This was in the mid-2000s. Massive support for climate action. Then suddenly all these climate denier scientists were put out in the media. So then you sort of saw a bit of a retreat by working class people from the movement, because a lot of people are not scientists and thought, oh, they're scientists and they say climate change isn't happening. And they're scientists and they say climate change is happening. And so it wasn't necessarily that people had been won to the climate denier viewpoint, but they weren't confident to say, they just retreated from the movement, retreated from asserting clearly that climate change is an issue and something needs to happen about it. Mm. And so we have to win those people to the movement. So we can't just be focused on the educated middle class. Otherwise, we're going to lose.
Sue, do you reckon just drilling down a little bit further into this and then drilling sideways and then hydraulically fracturing the subject a little bit and stimulating it, do you reckon there's parallels between the way that NGOs have tended to maybe turn the tap on and then off again with having big protests, but there's not this organic kind of ongoing movement? Do you reckon there's parallels with that around climate actions from NGOs with some of the big union rallies? And how do we... it strikes me that there's a lot of appetite right now for ongoing action around climate, but how do you start to build up that sort of ongoing grassroots mobilising capacity so that it's kind of, it's not just in the hands of some particular organisation to, press a button, make a rally happen, and then it's done?
Well, I guess we're sort of, that's what we're trying to do. So in terms of this alliance, individuals are welcome, not just organisations. And I think there is a view, we haven't necessarily totally decided this yet, but that this Climate Justice Alliance keep going after the 22nd of February. And, I think we'll definitely be supporting the next two actions organised by some of the groups that are participating in the alliance. So that would be the uni student strike in March, the Extinction Rebellion, Autumn Rebellion in May and the school strikes climate in on the May the 15th. So we'll be supporting those actions following on from our rally on the 22nd. But I think we want to do something else following on from that, possibly around World Environment Day. We haven't decided exactly what yet. But I think we need to make sure that this is not a one rally wonder and that we develop this ongoing collaboration. And, you know, some of the NGOs need to be involved in that as well, but there also need to be the activist groups. And I think one of the reasons why Extinction Rebellion has grown so much is because it is promising activism. And there aren't really many other climate groups that are promising that, although there are lots of little suburban climate groups that are doing things in their suburbs and local areas. And I think it's only through that ongoing activity that you can, avoid that turn-on, turn-off effect with mass protests. And probably I would say the climate movement, I sort of roughly remember when, I think it might have been around the 2008-09 period, when a lot of the groups in the climate movement, in Victoria anyway, decided that mass rallies were not important anymore. And so people just stopped organising them and did other things, or might have organised a small rally here and there of a couple of hundred on a weekday outside Parliament for something. But, like, they just, I don't know, they lost the sense of the power that mass rallies can have. Now, I'm not saying it's just mass rallies by themselves. It's all the work associated with them and other activities as well. But you also do need mass rallies, and I think that's what School Strike for Climate really retaught everybody is the power of a mass rally when they organise their first one. And I think in the union movement, possibly, you know, in the Work Choices campaign, which I was involved in as well, I mean, that was on behalf of Socialist Alliance, those mass rallies were not inevitable during Work Choices. We had some more left and more militant leaderships and some of the unions, including in Victoria at that time. But some of those rallies around the country might not have happened if it wasn't for some of the Victorian unions. And basically, a lot of those rallies, we were working with other militants in the union movement, and we initiated motions in different unions, calling for rallies, et cetera. And then basically Trades Hall Council in Victoria and Trades Hall in Geelong moved motions calling for National Days of Action. And then gradually with motions from different unions around the country, then other state trades and labour councils called rallies as well, and then always New South Wales was the last. But there was big pressure, and Socialist Alliance was part of that in initiating those rallies. And one of those rallies, I can't remember which one it was, we took up massive petitions, which were sent to various union leaderships and the ACTU, et cetera. And we know there were huge numbers of signatures on those petitions, but we actually managed to force action. And that was when Greg Combe, who was ACTU secretary at the time, said that the ACTU would not be calling mass rallies because blue-collar workers on the streets was a bad look for the movement. This is against Work Choices. So, there's always different ways in which you can call action and so forth, but the more left leaderships in Victoria were really critical in that.
And is that a conscious strategy now with Climate Justice Alliance? Is that a kind of a facet of what you're doing, is to try and, in a sense, recreate that kind of domino effect, first getting individual unions to sign on to these climate rallies, then, if possible, some trades halls, and really try and push climate action into the trade union movement when it's kind of not really been particularly vocal at this time?
Well, I think that's certainly one of the purposes of this National Day of Action, is to try and link the unions in with the climate movement. And there was one action, but it also there was a People's Climate March. I can't remember when that was, quite a few years ago. And David Spratt, the author of Climate Code Red, was instrumental in forcing the NGOs to work together, and also bringing various unions on board for that as well. But that was really a one-off. And I know there are unions that supported the school strike for climate, but the unions have not really been involved in this in a big way, and they really need to be, because otherwise what's going to happen is industries or you know, we'll have what happened with Hazelwood, where Hazelwood power station, you know, owners just suddenly announced it was going to close, no alternative jobs, that's it, you know, out the door. And there has to be a plan for alternative jobs for those workers. And the bosses of these power stations are not going to be committed to alternative jobs.
And the bosses of the coal mines. And that's I guess, another factor is if you wait till it's shutting down, that's when you've got the least bargaining power. And that doesn't seem to be much consciousness of that in the union movement. The time to call for a transition is now, not when the stuff's getting shut down.
That's right. And I also think that goes hand in hand with another issue, which is that the government has to be prepared to offer alternative jobs. It's not good enough to just say, oh, there'll be thousands of jobs in renewables. Well, there might be, but if you don't have the particular skills for those jobs in renewables, you will not be getting those jobs if you're a miner or in a particular coal-fired power station. So it means that you have to... it means we also need a publicly owned energy industry, because that's the only way that you can actually guarantee alternative jobs. Otherwise, you know, a boss of a renewables company is under no obligation to employ a worker that comes from another boss of a coal-fired power station that's closing down. So, like, those sort of things have to go hand in hand. And the climate movement also has to be serious about this, about arguing for guaranteed alternative jobs, because otherwise then you put workers in communities where there's high unemployment, and this is what really happened in central Queensland, where there's high unemployment, you put workers and communities in a position where they might even know that climate change is a big issue that's going to destroy the planet, especially after the bushfires, but that people will be, if there's no alternative jobs, then people, you know, make all sorts of choices, because you also have to pay the rent and put food on the table. So you don't want to force workers in a situation where they're trying to choose jobs against climate change and climate action. We have to guarantee this so that we can win people to the call for serious action on climate change, which means we actually do need to shut down the fossil fuel industry. You know, obviously phasing it out, but, you know, it needs to be shut down if we're going to save the planet.
I think we have to kind of wrap it up kind of now. Do you have any kind of final comments you'd like to make, Sue?
I think that's pretty much everything, that if we're serious about shutting down the fossil fuel industry or phasing it out totally, is a milder way of saying it, that is because the fossil fuel runs through every facet of the capitalist system. And so if we're going to be serious about doing that, we can only do that with workers in those industries on board. Otherwise, we're not going to have the power, the people power, to force the closure of those industries. And so we need to be really conscious that we have to win not just educated middle class, but working class people on board, including in those fossil fuel industries, to call for phasing out those industries altogether, which then means guaranteed alternative jobs, not just flippant comments about there are alternative jobs in renewables. We need guaranteed alternative jobs. And then if we can do that, we'll win those communities on side to the climate movement.
Hmm. And how can people get involved and help support the Feb 22 rally?
Well, we haven't got a lot of time left to promote it, but certainly people should look up the rally on Facebook. If you're on Facebook, it's called Climate Crisis National Day of Action Melbourne. So share that around to everybody. But also, if you can help, we want people to help with postering and leafleting and, you know, getting the word around, getting it announced on community radio in your local area. There'll also be a rally in Geelong as well as in Melbourne on the 22nd and many places all over the country. But really, we need lots of help with leafleting. We'll be leafleting the city train stations next week. But also, if you can't get to a city train station, would like some leaflets to hand out at your local station or somewhere in your local community or put up posters, please contact us. And in fact, Jacob, who's doing the show, is one of the organisers of the postering and leafleting. So maybe Jacob can give out your contact details for that as well.
Yeah, so if there's anyone on the show that is interested in leafleting and postering for the rally, please text or call me at 0458 95 83 85.
And maybe one last question, last issue. If you're part of an organisation that would like to endorse the rally, please contact us as well. So some of the endorsements we've got are from Friends of the Earth, Extinction Rebellion, the Teachers Unions, the Australian Education Union and Independent Education Union, the United Workers Union, the Maritime Union, National Tertiary Education Union, and a whole bunch of different organisations have endorsed. So if your organisation could endorse, that would also be great as well. It's good for people to see the range of organisations that are supporting this event.
Totally. All right. Well, thanks heaps for talking to us this morning and for all your work in trying to coordinate this and make it happen.
Thanks. Bye.
Cheers, Sue. Alrighty. Yes, Sue Bolton there, Moreland councillor and Socialist Alliance member and part of the Climate Justice Alliance that is building a national climate crisis day of action all around the country, including here in Melbourne and in Geelong.